everyone, welcome to the Front Judge Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. And like every week via Skype, I'm here with my co-host, Mike Neff. Hey, Neff.
How you doing?
Good, Mike. Now, we're going to break down all things from this past weekend's NASCAR events at Kansas Speedway, which I thought were entertaining for the most part to some degree. Some degree, maybe not. But before we get started, make sure to head on over to Apple Podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating. Neff, we need the people. We need our reviews. We need ratings. We need the fans.
Let people know we're out here and doing a good job. If we don't get the support, we don't get advertisers. If we don't get advertisers, we don't get a podcast. So we need you to get over there and get on board. Let them know you think we're the best podcast you've ever heard in the history of podcasts, even if it's a lie.
Especially the racing podcast. And let us know what you like, what you don't like, what guests you like to have. Or tweet at me, at Dustin Lovino, or at Neff, at MNeff Short Track. But Neff, let's get right into it. Talk about Kansas. As I said, we'll talk about the Cup race first, as we typically do. I thought it was
Actually is okay this week, because it was the first race.
Yeah, it was Thursday night.
Kind of weird.
Thursday night. I think it was the first scheduled Thursday night race since 1985, if I'm not mistaken, at the Cup level. I thought it was a good race. No car was really the clear-cut favorite. Denny Hamlin led the most laps and ultimately scored his fifth win of the season, a series high, passing the four car of Kevin Harvick late. This came after four disappointing finishes for the 11 car, but they sure have speed. And I think right now, Neff, they're probably maybe the clear favorite over Harvick. It's neck and neck between those two.
Yeah, I mean, that's... The way this year's gone so far, it's been a coin flip with those two, because invariably, Denny will dominate a race, Harvick dominates the next one, then Denny, then Harvick, and it's just been a ping-pong back-and-forth kind of thing all season, and I don't really see it changing. I admit that the 11 team was off for two or three successive races there, which was surprising, and Harvick was still in the mix, but once again, Harvick fails to live up to his closer moniker from Mike Joy. And I love to point that out whenever he does, because he's still got more second-place finishes than first-place finishes. You're not a closer if that's the case.
For sure. And really, all race, he finished fourth, which I think he kind of got lucky into that. Granted, the last restart of the race, he pushed Alex Bowman, had a hell of a restart from the inside, pushed Bowman past, I think it was Byron on the outside. And then as soon as Harvick got to turn two, he made a move to the outside and got the lead. That's a veteran move on a restart. Yep. with the package that we have right now. And I was kind of surprised he was able to hold on to a top five, because that car was ill handling all night. He kept complaining over the radio how loose he was. Finished fourth. Like I said, I really didn't think there was a clear-cut favorite in this race. At times, Denny was the best car. Other times, Keselowski and Truex had the best car. Even Kyle Busch got his first stage win of the year before he put in the fence and finished 11th. But... yeah, Hamlin's on a roll, even though he had four straight finishes outside the top 10. But his fifth win of the year, him and Chris Gabehart got this stuff down. He's got a 21% winning percentage with Gabehart over the last 2 years. A year and a half, really.
Yeah, I mean, those two, Gabehart and Hamlin, have been a great mix. And it's, as I mentioned it a while back on a podcast, Hamlin was adamant that Wheeler was going to be his last crew chief ever. But... they have absolutely run with the ball now that he and Gabehart have been together. And I'm with you, and it's not just that. It's their pit crew, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that pit crew has been hitting on all cylinders. Ed Watkins had a crucial late-race fuel deal where he had to have an exact amount of fuel going in, which there's no gauge on the can, so he had to count it in his head, and he couldn't put in too much because there was worry about nose weight, you know, affecting the way the car handled. So he had to be really precise and really quick, and they pulled it off and gained him spots. I think Hamlin, other than when people took two tires and they took four, or that somebody took gas only when they took two, they gained spots on everybody that did the same strategy or maintained their position every time on pit road all night long, and have most of the season. So that pit crew of theirs is as responsible for these wins that they've been getting as Gabehart and Hamlin have been.
Yeah, and I'm sure over Hamlin's last 10 years or so, that pit crew's changed, a bit year to year, or maybe not year to year, but over the past decade. But no matter what, it seems like, even when they had the competition back in the Spectrum or then Time Warner Center, the 11 team always seemed to be one of the best teams on pit road. And they're showing it this year for sure. They're getting Hamlin track position. You got Gabe Hart, who's a very calculated driver, or crew chief atop the pit box. It's a good matchup. And I asked them a couple wins ago, I think it was after the Homestead win, I asked them both, like, why do you guys just mesh? And they said it's because they trust each other. And it's interesting to see how Gabe Hart went from the Xfinity Series, where he got wins with, you know, Eric Jones. I think he had some with Kyle. And then he went to Brandon Jones in 2018. That was Jones's first year. And we'll talk obviously about Jones here a little bit too. But didn't have much success. And then got moved up to the 11 team. And really has turned, I don't want to say Hamlin's career around, but let's face it, 2018 was a terrible year for Hamlin. And now they've got 11 wins over the past 51 races together. So pretty lights out for them. I also thought it was interesting that on the Zoom call post-race, Hamlin said that he's starting to win races with his mind, not necessarily with his talent. And that is very interesting to me, because flashback a month and a half ago, when the whole Corey LaJoie, you know, saga was going on, it seemed to be in Hamlin's head, yet he did go out and win at Homestead the next week. So he's backing it up, but...
I mean, don't forget Indy.
Yeah.
I mean, Indy is, I think, is a perfect example of how it gets in his head negatively. Because Harvick knew what was going on. Harvick conserved his stuff instead of going up and really racing Hamlin, because he knew Hamlin was pushing it too hard. And Hamlin didn't process it to back off and make his tire last. So you can say that it was just a misfortune, but at the same time, the other people that were racing against him knew Hamlin was going to blow a tire, and he blew a tire. So there's Hamlin's head is better than it used to be by a long stretch. I mean, don't forget wrecking on the first lap or two at Homestead when he had a shot at the title.
2010.
But he's still got a little ways to go. And he may never get there. I mean, that's one of those things that if you have that mindset of second guessing things or over pressing, that can be a personality trait that you might not be able to overcome totally. But he has worked with sports psychologists the last few years, and he is definitely more in control of his emotions. But I think his emotions still can get him in trouble, like they did in Indy. And until he wins a championship, I don't think you're ever going to be able to say that it's not in his head at least a little bit.
Yeah, and he did say, I think it was the Zoom call, that the next week when when they picked drivers to be on or whatever, Hamlin said that loss at Indy was worse than the championship. And it's to his credit, he's been close to Indy before. And only that and the 600, you think of the 600 this year, just luck, you know, recently in the 600, he has ballast come out of his car on the pace laps. And then that Wednesday night, he finished, I believe, second to Chase Elliott. He probably had a shot to win the 600 if they kept the ballast in the car. And he's got 5 wins this year, but just think of how many he could have. Bristol comes to mind, where he just overstepped his boundaries late in the race there. Indy, obviously, where he's leading with 7 laps to go, blew right front tire. There's probably 2 or 3 more he could have won.
Second Darlington race he had a shot too. So that's absolutely, I mean, and I'm with you. I mean, and you know, ifs and buts are candy and nuts, but it's true that that team has been in contention most of the year. I mean, they had a couple of races where they were really out to lunch. Pocono,
Martinsville.
Martinsville. But for the most part, yeah, they've been in contention for everything. And you know, winning these races is hard, and that's why winning 5 of them this point of the season is pretty impressive. And I won't lie, I'm bummed that he won, because I was still holding out hope for that 17 winners, and now we got to have 7 straight different winners in the next 7 races, which I don't picture happening, but you never know.
No, you never know. We got Daytona, 2 Daytona races coming up, which was, again, it could be a mix-up in who wins, at least, whether it's 7 straight or not. But yeah, Hamlin hitting on all cylinders. Like you said, he's been out to lunch on a few of these deals. Martinsville comes to mind. You expect Hamlin to be leading a ton of laps there, you know, running top 5 all race, and drops like a rock at the beginning. Goes back in the 30s. But yeah, Hamlin, I would put him as the favorite right now, slightly over Harvick. But I also want to get your opinion on this, Neff, because Hamlin now has 42 career victories, marching up the all-time wins list. It's more than Mark Martin, slightly less than Junior Johnson, who has 50. I don't think we've ever talked about this on the podcast. Who do you think's the best driver to have never won a championship?
Wow. I mean, that is a really tough call because of the fact that, I mean, Mark Martin, I would lean to Martin because of his success in other series. I mean, especially in the ASA days where he just dominated in the Midwest and was so close so many times in the Cup Series. Junior was an innovator, and he had some shots, and obviously winning 50 races, you don't suck to win 50 races. But I don't, and again, I wasn't around when he was racing that much, but what I've read, what I've seen, I don't know that and he is kind of that Cale Yarborough kind of an athlete where he was constantly on the chip going for it all the time. And that's where that doesn't usually pay off in championships. Where Martin was very calculated, pushed it when he had to, rode when he had to, he never really put it together. Mm-hmm. And that's where at this point, I'm still going to say Mark Martin is probably the best driver without a championship. If Denny can get to maybe 60 wins without a championship, then I'd say that he falls into that category. But right now, even though he's got more wins than Mark, I think Mark has still had the better shots at championships and not gotten through with it.
Yeah, Denny's been close last year, 2010, 2012. He had a good year. I feel like I'm missing a year where he was pretty good. This is the fourth time that he's won at least a handful of races in a year. I did some math, and Hamlin's win percentage is 8 out of, you know, all the starts he's made. Mark Martin's is 4.5. He's made a ton of starts. And then Junior Johnson has made nearly 300 less starts than Denny, but his win percentage is 15.9. So it's all subjective, obviously.
And that's where, you know, I get in that argument all the time when people want to get talking about Kyle Busch versus Richard Petty. When Junior was running that good and winning that much, you had 5 or 6 cars that ever had a shot at winning.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have 20 cars every weekend, and people will argue that point that it's not that many, but it legitimately is. On any given weekend, there are 20 cars on the track that, if things fall right, can win races. And it's been that way for about 8, maybe 9 years. And we've never seen this kind of parity in a sport. And it's only going to get even more parity when the new car comes out. So it's definitely apples to oranges, but still, 50 wins is 50 wins. And, I mean, there were 5 or 6 cars that had a shot to win, but Richard Petty and David Pearson were driving a couple of them. Yeah. So you had to do some pretty good races to win those races.
Yeah, for sure. I would personally go Denny. It might be recency bias, too. We're in the midst of his career and how successful he's been over the past year and a half. Mark's obviously got a ton of starts, ton of wins in all series. He's, what, second on the all-time wins list in Xfinity. But I would just lean towards Hamlin. And he's been so consistent over his years. I mean, let's face it, 2018 was the only year that he didn't win a race. Now, he is in top-notch equipment, obviously, and he has been his whole career with Gibbs. And he hasn't pulled through. But I would say right now he's got to be the co-favorite right now for the championship this year. And it comes down to Phoenix.
Yeah, he and Harvick absolutely are the two co-favorites right now.
It comes down to Phoenix, which Harvick is obviously, that's his playground, but Hamlin's not too shabby there either.
And Harvick hasn't been that good there the last couple, 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to what he was.
Right.
When he was dominant. Everybody knew they were running for second when they got to Phoenix, and it's not that case anymore.
Right. So I would go Hamlin. You would go Martin. It's subjective.
Well, yeah, and it's also age. I mean, let's face it. 2/3 or 3/4 of Martin's wins came before you were alive,
right,
or at least before you can remember. And so that's, you know, and the same thing with Junior Johnson for me. I never got to see Junior Johnson race a race. So it's, you know, it's you're biased a little bit just because of what you've seen with
recency.
Your own eyes. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it, but that's kind of the way it works.
For sure. Now, moving right along, I want to talk, you know, more about this Kansas race. You had your typical top five. You had Keselowski second, Truex third, Harvick fell to fourth. Eric Jones had a much-needed solid finish in fifth. nothing too surprising about this lineup, but restarts were insane, which has been, you know, kind of the product that we've had over the past year and a half with this package. And it led to some violent crashes, which we'll get into, but overall, I thought the racing was okay. I thought it was good at times, lackluster at times, not as bad as some of the other series this weekend, but it wasn't bad. I truly thought Keselowski had probably the best car, him or Truex, but Hamlin got the win. That's what counts.
Yeah, I'm not quite as optimistic about the racing as you were. I thought the racing was subpar, even by Kansas standards, which I've never understood why Kansas is always one of the highest rated races all season long.
Wasn't this time.
You go back and look at TV ratings, they're always so high, and I'm just like, I don't get it. But I agree. This time it wasn't. Again, the product being weeknight races, which is just really making me very sad, because we've all clamored for midweek races for years, and the TV numbers just aren't backing it up. And I think that's going to hurt in us trying to get them going forward. But in my view of the racing, I thought it was subpar. Again, aero is everything, but tires just didn't matter. And it was all, you know, a matter of track position most of the race. I think you had, I can't remember if it was three or four on-track passes for the lead, legit on-track passes for the lead with, you know, guys that were on a same or similar strategy fuel-wise. And it just had I didn't think it was even that great back, like, third or fourth position. I mean, once you had guys in those positions, they couldn't pass each other. They could get next to each other, but you couldn't pass. So that's where I'm all for it taking three or four laps of, you know, side drafting or whatever, which is really kind of annoying because we talk about that constantly now. But working your way up an inch or a foot every lap and eventually making a pass. But these things where you'd have five or six laps of guys just dead next to each other with nobody getting advantage of the line, and there was no movement. And I don't know. And like you said, too, guys would be what appear to be the dominant cars, get back in traffic a little bit and just couldn't get by anyone. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's why I was less impressed with the racing than you were.
And then you put like a 15th place car, which William Byron was much of the night, if not worse. There was times he was in the mid 20s and gets out front and he got passed he repassed Keselowski. All you need,
he threw out a parachute and dropped to like 20th.
Yeah, he fell to, I believe, 10th at the finish. So over the last 20 laps, he fell to 10th once he lost that track position on a restart. But Neff, I was going to bring this up later, but you brought up ratings, so I want to hit on that quickly. Kansas was, what, the fourth midweek race of the year, plus the All-Star race a couple weeks ago. And ratings-wise, this looks to be the lowest-rated race in 20 years, at least 20 years.
Yeah, this century.
Yeah.
Let's just throw that number out there. This century.
So, I mean, I like midweek races, and we've talked about this before. Yeah, absolutely love them because it shortens the season on the calendar. It could, in the future, lengthen the overall season in terms of races, potentially. But I can't imagine that the networks are very thrilled or sold on midweek races because with less ratings, obviously, means less advertising revenue coming in.
Exactly. And it's going to be kind of a toss-up because even with those low ratings, if you look at whatever was on TV that night, I think we were still in the top five of shows on television. So it's kind of a relative thing. But at the same time, yeah, I can't imagine the networks are going to pay that kind of money. But at the same time, and Matt Weaver drums this in my head all the time, that you cannot beat live sports. And these networks were all starved for live sports. Now, mind you, they may be putting it on NBCSN or CBS Sports Network or, you know, Fox Sports, whatever it is, where it's not on the main networks.
Yeah.
But they have all of these networks that need content. And so even though it's not pulling that bigger ratings, it's better than cornhole championships. And so they're looking at it that it's a major sport and it's still going to draw numbers that exceed most other sporting events that are available at that time. So they're still going to want them. but they're not going to pay the premium that they paid to get these packages initially. And at the same time, you can always blame it off on COVID too, which is going to be the excuse for probably the next 3 years when we get to talking about any kind of sporting events.
Yeah. And from what I recall, the five races, including the All-Star race, have all been on NBCSN, or, you know, four of them on Fox Sports 1. And I think this was just kind of a play for NBC and NBC Sports to see what ratings could be like. And it
turned, I agree. I think they just did it as a trial balloon to see what it would look like.
Yeah, because going forward, I mean, we're getting to the playoffs, and none of those are going to be midweek.
Playoffs?
Yeah, we're done with midweek races for the year, which is, you know, in all likelihood, unless you have an Xfinity race that needs to be made up, which there's two of them still, or there's four truck races, so maybe that is a midweek race like we saw at the beginning portion of, you know, the resumption of the season. But
or we get rain.
Yeah, or rain.
So you get rain, that happens too.
But I would be
interested. Especially, which we have yet to have that in our modern playoff world. And I keep, at some point it's going to happen, where we get a constant deluge from Friday through Tuesday, where they can't run the race, and it ends up being Wednesday, and you're like, we got a race coming on Saturday night, what are we going to do? Because you can't, with this schedule, you can't just move, you know, Talladega to the end of the season. That's not an option, because there are elimination races and stuff's all going in order. Yeah. So you may move a race to a different day, but it's got to be within that three-race block in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And so at some point, sometime, it's going to happen where we just get a weather event and it ends up being a Wednesday or Thursday night that they have to run one of these races. And then it'll be interesting to see what kind of numbers they get in the playoffs.
For sure. And I think back 2 years ago at Indy, where it did rain Friday through Sunday. This was my first time at Indy.
You were there.
Yeah, first time being there, and all I saw was rain for 3 days. And then we had a doubleheader with Xfinity and Cup on Monday. So by the time the Cup hauls got out of there, it was probably 7 o'clock or so. And then they had to go back to Charlotte, only to go back to Vegas for the, you know, the playoff opener. But regardless, that's near here or there. The ratings, let's face it, they kind of tanked on Thursday night, which is not good for NASCAR, not good for NBC, not good for fans.
Good for us.
Yeah, not good for fans who like midweek races, unfortunately. But we did have a lot of, we talked about restarts, so I want to hit on that. There was a lot of them, especially in the final stage again. A couple of huge crashes, Neff. Kind of scared me. One of them did. Let's go with the first one first. We'll get to that one next. Joey Logano blew a left front going into turn one, taking out Matt DiBenedetto. This had huge playoff implications. Matt DiBenedetto, Austin Dillon, who obviously won last week, luckily for him, and Jimmy Johnson, most notably. Also, Clint Bowyer and William Byron also had slight contact. But this had big playoff implications, because now Jimmy Johnson, who was having a so-so day, is, what, 18 points out now? That's not good.
Well, not only that, but you got to think we're still going to race at Daytona and the Daytona Road Course, which have prime opportunities for guys that haven't won a race yet to win a race. So he's 18 out. But I want to say he's almost 30 out if you go two more spots up. So it's getting down to win or not make playoffs time for Jimmy. And not to say that he can't. We've seen him, I mean, on the Roval in Charlotte, he had a real chance to win when he stepped on it against Truex. And we've seen him win at Sonoma. So he can win road courses. But, you know, and those of us that have seen him plate race know he sucks at plate racing, or, excuse me, super speedway racing. But, you know, but anything can still happen in those events. But he has dug himself a hole, to say the least. And I should say the 48 team has dug themselves a hole, because it hasn't just been Jimmy. Although there are, I want to say there's at least three examples that I saw this week, because they had a little video out about that, of mistakes that Jimmy has personally made in races that have cost him. And I mean, and most notably was the Darlington one, but there have been a couple others where he's put himself in positions that he shouldn't have that ended up damaging the car and ending his days. So we're looking at it now. Like you said, we've got some truck guys we're going to talk about a little later too that are in dire straits. But Johnson right now, it's not win at all costs, but it's getting really close.
Yeah, he's 43 behind DiBenedetto, who right now is 15th on the playoff board. And then Boyer's 7 points ahead of that. So it is getting not must win, but like you said, we have two Daytona races coming up, and Michael McDowell sticks out like a sore thumb to me.
Or DiBenedetto.
Yeah, or DiBenedetto.
Really good on super speedways, too.
And road courses, as he proved last
McDowell's
year.
Yeah, McDowell's good on road course, so there you go.
Yeah, so...
wouldn't that be awesome? McDowell ends up getting in, and Johnson doesn't. That would be a story.
Yeah, and you mentioned the races this year where Johnson's kind of cost himself. I mean, first Darlington, obviously. The Coke 600, not his fault, necessarily, but his team's fault. Martinsville, he won a stage, but didn't run well the third to final stage, so there's some points that he lost. Daytona or Talladega, him and Harvick got together, you know, I think with 7 laps to go or so. Pocono, he ran terrible. And there's other races. Brickyard, obviously not his fault that he had COVID, but he missed a race. Yeah. So there's 30 points potentially or more, or a win. He's been good there. You got Texas last weekend. I mean, there's over 100 points he's left on the table this year.
Sure.
And they're
and
catching
one thing
up.
We got to remember, say all we want, we race at Dover twice. You talk about Phoenix being Harvick's playground. Dover is Jimmy's playground. So, especially the fact that we got a doubleheader weekend there, that second Dover race, I will be stunned if Jimmy is not solidly in contention that whole day. Because you give him a day, you know, treat that first race as a test, however you want to call it, he'll probably be in contention to win that. But he's going to have his car dialed in by the second race. So that second race is when I expect Jimmy to really have a shot at winning a race.
Yeah, now if I agree with you on the Johnson part, and if he's always a factor at Dover. And for a while there, we say Phoenix is Harvick's playground. Well, Dover has always been Jimmy Johnson's playground. And it'd only be fitting in his final year for him to get a win at his best track. So that is something to look out for. And I know we kind of, you know, picked our picks as of right then with what the playoff grid looked like. But it's changed quite a bit over the past week, given that, you know, there was that big – the restart had big playoff implications. Boyer's plus 42, and he had a terrible night, but somehow gained points on the cut line. DiBenedetto's plus 35, Byron plus 10, Reddick minus 10, Jones minus 12, Johnson minus 18 – like we just talked about, there's always that chance for a surprise winner at Daytona or wherever. You know, who picked Cole Custer to win at Kentucky? Nobody. Who you got? Do you got these three making it? Or do you have three of these six making it? Or do you have someone else making it?
Well, like I said, I think DiBenedetto's going to make it in with a win. I don't know where. I'm guessing Daytona, but you never know. But I'm with you. The more I think about it here, McDowell winning on a road course could absolutely happen. And the only reason I don't see it happening is because the road course at Daytona has so much of the track on the big oval.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you come out of it on that in turn two, you go all the way around. Yes, you got the chicane, and I don't know if they're going to add a second chicane or not. But your motor makes such a big difference here. And, yeah, I know front rows had some speed, but they don't have that kind of speed. And there's so much speed involved in that portion of the track that I could legitimately see McDowell leading, going onto the banking on the last lap and just get out horsepower to the finish line. So, I mean, it's a possibility there, but I really feel like Byron is the question mark, in my opinion, because I don't think they're consistent enough.
No.
And at this stage of the game right here, you're going to have to be consistent over these last 7 races. So you're going to have, I still feel like DiBenedetto's going to win one, and I feel like Reddick's going to win one or be close enough to winning one that he's going to gain these points up. And I feel like it's Byron that's probably going to shoot himself in the foot and not make it. And then your other wild card, even worse than Byron, is Boyer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Boyer could go out and run top 5 3 races in a row and then have 4 races where he finishes 32nd and misses the playoffs on that last one. So I feel like DiBenedetto, Reddick, I feel really confident about. Other than that, I think the remainder is going to be a battle between those guys to see who gets there. But as I said a moment ago, and I still stand by it, I think Jimmy wins at Dover, so he'll be the third one to get in out of that.
Yeah, it's tough because I think Erik Jones is going to make it somehow. And he's been in this position the last couple of years where he needed to win late in the regular season or at least have consistent finishes in order to make the playoffs. But Boyer's got a 42-point advantage. It's tough to see him give away all those points, but he...
Dude, we see Boyer did.
Oh, for sure. He's also given away a ton of points this year. There's a lot of... DiBenedetto's given away points this year, too. That's why these guys are hovered around the playoff cut line. I think Jimmy gets in. Like you said, he could win Dover. He could also win Daytona. He's ran there before. Not many other drivers have. I say Boyer, Johnson, Jones. I don't know. DiBenedetto could win either Daytona race. He could win any race. He's had some good runs this year. But for some reason, I'm thinking Jones and Johnson both race their way in. It would be terrible if Johnson missed the playoffs in his final year, but he's not having the send-off he deserves anyway, in my opinion, and that's none to his own doing. Obviously, there's real-world problems going on right now, as we talked about at length on this podcast. So, regardless, this is going to change every week, probably. There's going to be one guy who has a really good run, one guy who has a really bad run, and then an upset winner would shake everything up. So, now if that restart, I said we had two to talk about. That restart changed the playoff implications. Well, the second one, I'm just thankful everyone's okay, because terrible wreck. It looked like Christopher Bell threw a big block on Ryan Newman, got turned across the track, hit Chris Buescher. Ryan Preece, trying to miss both of them, just lost control of the car, might have got tagged, and hit the inside wall so hard. So hard. Gigantic impact. I was holding my breath. And that just sums up his luck this year, this month. He had three last-place finishes. JTG's finished last in all four races this month. Priest has the best finish this past weekend of, 34th, I think. Just terrible luck, and I'm just thankful he's okay.
Yeah, I was too. When I saw that thing live, I mean, that's one of those races where you cuss, or those wrecks where you cuss and you don't even realize you cussed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it happens after the fact that you realize you said it, because it was just, like you said, I'm like, I figure that's one of those where they're going to have to, like, help him out of the car, help him to the ambulance, and literally, I don't even know if the car was stopped yet, and he had the window net down already, and was getting out pissed off, which was refreshing to see, because that meant that he is in control of all his faculties. But yeah, I'm with you. When he bounced off that inside wall, the thing almost turned upside down, and he got hit again when he came back out.
By Newman.
It wasn't hard, but he still got hit. And I'm just like, man, he's going to be in trouble. And for him to get out of the car that quick was a huge testament. And, you know, I know we bitch about these cars being boxy and everything. And when the car tomorrow came out, what a change it was from what we were used to. But, man, the safety innovations in these cars are unbelievable, because there's no way you take a car from 1995 and make that hit. That dude's legs are gone, and he's probably got crushed sternum and a few hundred other broken bones in his body, and he's out for like 2 months trying to heal up, and he's coming back sooner than he should. And now, he didn't even have the wind knocked out of him. I mean, the fact that he got out of the car that fast was unbelievable. So, yeah, I'm with you. I was incredibly thankful to see him get out and walk away, and then once that happened, then I'm looking back at the wreck and going, man, people got to quit driving like idiots in the middle of the pack. Because that's where I know restarts are when you make your time, but making time from 16th to 15th just doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, but like you said, you got to get all you can get on restarts, because then once this gets spread out, very hard to pass. So it's difficult. It's got to be difficult, really difficult for the drivers, but yeah, I'm thankful for safer barriers, the Hans device, all the safety components that kept him safe in this accident, but obviously in all accidents too. Obviously, we thought the worst when Newman didn't get out of the car after the 500 right away and was then extracted out of his car, taken to the hospital. We all thought the worst.
By the way, can we quit showing that wreck?
Yeah, right?
I am tired of seeing the Newman wreck. I understand he lived, so we can get away with that, but Jeff Bodine lived too. And we watched that wreck for a couple weeks once we knew he was okay, and that was it. they are milking that Newman wreck to death, and I'm tired of seeing it.
It's sickening, too, honestly. Yeah. That they're just getting promotion out of it, which is kind of really frustrating. But regardless, happy to see Priest get out of that car as quick as he did. He also put a mask on, so if he can put a mask on after taking that big of a hit, you can, too. Talking to the fans, talking to anyone in general, so we can get this country back up and running. But, Neff, I want to talk quickly about Silly Season, because post-race Brad Keselowski was asked about it twice, and he seemed, again, what I thought, very noncommittal. He said that it's a work in progress, but fortunately there's been progress. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, which, I mean, Keselowski knows the game. he's not going to give away where he's going or whatever, you know. So Clint Bowyer said on a Zoom call he'd like to be back at Stuart Racing next year. Obviously, Chase Briscoe's showing what he can do in the Xfinity Series, probably ready for Cup. And then you got other drivers on the hot seat too, Eric Jones, Christopher Bell. I mean, who knows who's going where? But this is the time of year where things really start getting ramped up. And I would expect over the next month that we really start to get a clear picture. The first domino is going to fall, and then everything's going to kind of fall in line.
Yeah, they call them dominoes for a reason, and that's because once that first one goes, then everything starts to unfold. And the interesting one, and I know social media is full of crap and you can't believe anything you read, but some great postulation going on about Hendrick contracting.
Mm-hmm.
And I still can't picture that, but at the same time, I saw a really interesting analysis of it the other day where Hendrick goes down to three cars. They put Bowman into 48. They rebrand it as the 5. Then they take the 88 and sell that charter to Junior Motorsports, and Junior Motorsports becomes a Cup owner.
Mm.
And I don't picture that. I don't picture Junior wanting to make that financial commitment. He has long espoused that he has no desire to be a Cup owner. But in order to keep it in the family, if Rick wants to get out of it, I could see him doing that short term. And then maybe when things improve, we get back to it and he goes back to four teams, and it, you know, it makes it easier for him hanging on to that charter. But I'll be curious to see if Keselowski goes, and I've said it all along, I can't picture him going back to Hendrick just the way he was unceremoniously dumped out of there. And, you know, he's a big boy and he knows that business is business, and that's why I could see him possibly going back there. But I just, the way that he got foisted out of that ride, or not given a ride, I find it really hard to believe that Brad would go back to Hendrick.
Yeah, and that report came from Lee Spencer, who's a credible journalist, obviously, been around the sport a very long time, well-respected. And she said the idea, possibly, is for Alex Bowman to replace Johnson in the 48, and then, like you said, maybe sell to the 5 or whatever. Numbers get bought, the 48 gets brought to the 5. Whatever. It would be tough to see Hendrick, arguably the biggest team in NASCAR, shrink to 3 cars. And like you said,
biggest team in the last 25 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be tough. And that might say a lot about the climate of the sport, but also remember that Ally has a 3-year deal. They're signed on through 2023 on the 48 car. So Bowman needs sponsorship. I mean, Rick's paying for some of it this year.
And that's ultimately where this whole thing is coming down to, is getting sponsors on the 88 is hard. And, you know, they've got sponsorship lined up for the 48, so that's where if you're going to drop it down, that makes sense. You know, Elliott's got no problem getting sponsors.
Right.
Byron's got connections, and he's got some sponsorship lined up. But Bowman's the one that's the challenge. And if you're going to have to go down, that keeps you from having to sign, you know, you've got 3 guys under contract beyond this year. So you don't have to bring another driver in because you've already got 3 of them signed. So you just go down that path with sponsors that you have. But again, I'm with you. I find it really difficult to stomach that Hendrick, of anybody, cannot get sponsorship. But at the same time, I mean, Junior had trouble getting sponsors in that car.
Mm-hmm.
And when your most popular driver in your sport can't get sponsors, then you got really bad problems going on.
Yeah, definitely. There's also some guys in the Xfinity Series, which this is a good transition to the Xfinity Series now, who I would say are ready for Cup. You've obviously got Briscoe that we talked about. I think Austin Cindric ready for Cup. And, I mean, Ross Chastain, you could throw his hat in the midst. Obviously, he has connections to the 42 car.
As I say, Chastain is ready for competitive Cup.
Yes, yes.
Chastain's been in Cup. Right. Chastain knows how to Cup race, but I don't want to see him going up there. Although, at this point, if Colleague wants to go full-time Cup racing with Chastain, I think that'd be a great move. Because Colleague has proven that
they're in it. They're
on
in
the doorstep of being a premier team in the Cup Series.
Yeah, they're in it to be successful. And just look how they've built their Xfinity program over the past 5 years. They started in 2016. And sure, they got to the final eight with Blake Koch. But they weren't competitive, really. I mean, I think they had five top tens all year.
Yeah, that was a Newman effort right there.
Yeah.
You had to finish top like 12 or 13 every race, and you were going to make the playoffs, and that's what they did.
And then they kept getting more success year by year by year, and now this year, I mean, they have more top fives this year than they did in the first 4 years combined. So, that's a possibility too. But moving over to the Xfinity race now at Kansas, late race cautions prevented Harrison Burton from kind of running away with this one at the end once he caught and passed Austin Cindric, really made short work of him once he caught him. But Cindric led a career 131 laps, but on the last restart, Neff, I was really impressed with Brandon Jones, who went from 7th to the lead on a green-white checkered and got his second win of the year, second straight at Kansas. That was impressive because he didn't have a good restart, the initial restart, and he just got all the momentum off turn two, got down the back straightaway well, and was second coming to the white and passed Cindric on the white flag. Really, really impressed by Brandon Jones.
Obviously, Brandon Jones has been watching some tape, because all you had to do was look at Kentucky to see how Cole Custer threw it on the high side when he was on not on the final restart, but the next to last restart, when he restarted like 8th or 9th and passed like 6 cars in one lap. That's the same thing that Jones did in this one. He had a lousy restart, had 5 or 6 cars out ahead of him when he got to one, but threw it on the high side, and it stuck. And when he came off that corner, he had a humongous run on the leaders and blew by 3 or 4 cars going down a backstretch. And then, to his credit, he outdrove Cindric on the last lap to win the race. And Cindric, I think, had a better car, but flat out, Jones outdrove him on the last lap to win that race.
Absolutely. And Jones needed this. Because there was a 4-race stretch there where he had DNF, 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 DNF. And he had a top 10 last week. And then he got the win this week. So it's weird because he's shown flashes of a lot of speed. But then in some races, whether it's his own doing or not, he's gone in over his head, or he has a mechanical failure like at Indy where he was running top 10, or first lap after he wins the truck race, wrecks out of the Xfinity race. It's just, I don't know. He's put races together, but then there's other races. He's got an average finish of 16th this year, which isn't very good. But he's got the 2 wins. He's in the playoffs. And I think he could be a factor, honestly, in the playoffs.
I agree. I think he's underrated as a driver. I don't think people outside of the sport, I think he's underrated. I think inside the sport, people recognize the talent he's got, which is why he's in the car that he's in. But outside of the sport, I don't think he's given the credit for being as good of a driver as he is. And he's another one of these guys, and again, I hate that I'm not as in tune at the local level the last couple of years as I have been over the last 2 decades of my life. But I've watched Brandon Jones run since he was in pro late models. I saw him run at like the Rattler in Hop, Alabama, among other places. And he had ability and talent wherever he was. And I think he still does. And being in Gibbs equipment is not going to hurt him. So I'm fully committed or in full belief that barring a huge misstep on his part, he should be in contention for the final four. I think he'll make the final eight, and then it's a matter of can he make it to the final four.
Yeah, I mean, last year he would have made the final four if he got to the first round because he won Kansas. Yeah. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think he makes it to the final eight. I want to say easy, but as we've, nothing's easy in racing, first of all, and second of all, we've seen how inconsistent he is. Like, he has speed, but he's inconsistent. But yeah, I agree with that. I think he's also underrated outside of the sport. Now, there's some post-race fireworks, at least on Twitter, between Jesse Little and Joe Graff Jr., asking to meet over the off week and to get in a little tussle. I found that highly entertaining. These guys have had problems over the past few weeks. This week, the four got turned by the 08 for to set up that lap. There was a caution, the late race caution. There was a caution to force the green-white checkered. That was this. Jesse Little said, tweeted out, "Hey, Joe Graff Jr., I'm not about to start wrecking Johnny's cars or Bobby's for that matter. Obviously, Johnny Davis, Bobby Dotter. So with all of our free time next week, let me know when and where you want to meet, and I can handle whatever problem you seem to have with me." So I don't know if they're going to set this up, Neff, or they're not, but I'm entertained.
Oh, I'm absolutely entertained. And this is one of those things that being in the racing world in general, I've always enjoyed seeing. I mean, there's been a couple short tracks in the history of racing that have actually had boxing rings set up somewhere near turn one or somewhere on the front stretch, you know, where fans could see it. And if guys got mad at each other, they could go down in a boxing ring and settle it. So you weren't tearing up cars. You weren't taking a chance on getting somebody seriously injured. And I love it that these two guys are going to take something that is festering, and instead of, like you said, and instead of tearing up these guys' cars and spending a bunch of money and putting a real workload on the guys back at the shop, they're going to settle it amongst themselves. I think it's a fabulous idea. I hope they go through with it. Again, like you said, I would be surprised if they do. I don't know that the car owners will let them do that because, again, even at the Xfinity level with backmarker teams or second-tier teams, there's an investment in these drivers, and there's a commitment with these drivers, and you can't have them going out and breaking a hand or busting a nose and not being able to get in a car the next weekend. So I'd love to see the owners do it. I'd love to see it be in a charity event, especially if it helps out the Racing Brotherhood Foundation. But there's, I mean, it just, I think this is a great opportunity to showcase the sport, to get some attention on guys who don't normally get the spotlight shown on them, and to do an intelligent settle of a dispute.
Yeah, for one, it gets the teams out of it, and two, it gets the equipment out of it, like you said, especially with SS Greenlight, Bobby Dotter's team, and Johnny Davis, JD Motorsports team. Like you said, they're underfunded, so they really can't afford to be wrecking race cars on the racetrack. Joe Graff sent out two tweets in response to this, saying, "Now all of a sudden you want to talk. You hit in your hauler last week at Texas after the race when I tried to talk to you about trying to wreck me. I didn't hide my hauler after the race today, so you could have come to talk to me the whole hour after." And then he sent out another one. But regardless, I'm entertained. And if anyone knows about equipment and, you know, settle things off the racetrack, I would think Jesse Little's high on the list, especially in the Xfinity series, because prior to this year, and even this year in trucks, he's ran his own equipment. This JD Motorsports is the first time in his career that he's not raced on a family team, his family team. So, yeah, I don't know if they're going to do it. I'm sure we'll know if they do, but entertaining for sure.
Yeah, and like you said, kudos to Jesse, because like you said, for years there, literally half the week leading up to the race, he was the only person working on his own stuff. I mean, he was literally doing all of the setup on his own truck. And There aren't a whole heck of a lot of guys running his sport these days that are able to still do that. But he's definitely one of them.
For sure. Want to talk about some trucks?
Trucks.
Yeah. So the trucks had a double header. The first time they ran in consecutive days in series history. Austin Hill dominated the first race. I thought it was average at best. Matt Crafton scored the second victory on Sunday in a more entertaining race. A lot of carnage. Ended a three-year winless streak. Last year's champion ended a three-year winless streak this past weekend. Two new winners for the truck series this year, which going into the weekend, they only had two series regular win in the first eight races of the year. So now they're at four. Good for Hill because he's been really consistent all year. And then obviously good for Crafton, ending a three-year drought.
Yeah, I was glad for Matt. And again, Matt is one of those dudes that is like Mr. Consistency. And he and Sauter, both for running for ThorSport, have just not really had it going this year. I mean, they just as a team have not had they've had flashes, but they haven't been able to put races together. And I mean, it's an abomination, really, for you would think for Kraft to go that long without a win, but he went years without his first win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was just always in contention, and that's what he did last year to win a championship without score to win. So I never count Crafton out, and it was cool to see in that race him legitimately making aggressive moves that were almost un-Crafton-like, because he rarely puts himself in awkward positions, and I thought he did a few times in that race. There were a couple times, I know they caught one of them on camera, where he was way out of shape and saved it and never lifted and just kept around digging. So, yeah, glad to see that for him. Focused on his weight. I've never been – I know weight makes a big deal in IndyCar because you're dealing with ounces and fractions of ounces. It can make a difference. In stock cars, especially in trucks, I don't know that I've ever felt like weight of the driver was that big of a difference. They weigh you a few times during the season, and they make allowances based on what you weigh. So, but it was he's at least being recognized that he's dropped about 30 pounds.
Yeah, that stemmed from
somebody that's lost weight. I know what.
That stemmed from a Zoom call last Wednesday, I think it was, that he had with the reporters, and that was one of the subjects of him, because he posted a picture and he looks to be in pretty good shape since joining Toyota full time. And he's, like you said, lost 30 pounds down to 5. So,
speaking of joining Toyota full time, how about our boy Stuart Friesen?
Yeah.
Well, dude is struggling.
Yeah, let's move over to that, because there's three drivers on the outside looking into the playoffs, Neff, who I'm pretty surprised about. Friesen's one of them, Johnny Sauter's the other, and Tyler Ankrum's the third. And they all had disappointing races as well. And at least two of the three, I think, are in must win scenarios over the final six races of the regular season. Ankrum's minus 22. I think he can point himself in. He's been fast this year, but he got wrecked out on Saturday. Sauter's 53 back. Friesen is 71 back. I'm really surprised to see how much Friesen has struggled this year, his first with Toyota, and then also Sauter. I mean, it's just been tough for him this year.
Well, and some of Sauter's has just been they've been running poorly. He has some bad luck too. I mean, this weekend was another one of those where he was minding his own business back in a paddock, just doing his thing, and gets drilled, taken into the wall, then gets hit doubly hard, because even with the contact with the wall, I mean, he wasn't going to win the race after that, but I think he was still going to be able to run, and then he just got lit up. And the fact that he was able to drive that truck back to the pit lane was amazing, because that thing was totaled. But Friesen has been another one. He just, I don't know what's going on there. I honestly feel like it may be one of those situations where he's pushing it too hard because, you know, he's in with Toyota now and he's wanting to be where he was last year, and they're just not. And I think he's putting himself in some awkward situations that he really shouldn't. I definitely wanted to highlight on Ankrum, though, because Ankrum wrecked at least seven times over those two races. He just only hit the wall one time. He was so out of shape on some of those restarts. How he saved the truck was unbelievable. And that dude, I mean, again, another one of these guys that I've been watching for a long time, saw him run in Nashville during the All-American years ago for Kyle Beatty Motorsports, and he continues to impress me because he gets in some crazy situations, not of his own doing, where his truck gets just ridiculously out of shape, and he saves it and never even lifts and keeps going and gets good finishes out of it. So, I mean, I gave him credit this weekend because that I don't think he should have made the halfway point in either race, and he ended up getting wrecked out on the Saturday race, but on Friday's race, he had a pretty decent run, and, you know, and they had bad luck with a flat tire on the race last weekend where they ended up being a pretty decent truck once they got the brakes back on the rear of it, but they were 22 laps down when they did.
Yeah, I think Ankrum gets in because he's had the speed. It will, however, be an interesting competition meeting at GMS this week because Zane Smith got into him, and then ultimately Ankrum took off the front of Brett Moffitt's truck. So all three of them got involved in that accident on Saturday. Sauter going to have to win. He can win. because he's Johnny Sauter, first of all, and he goes on tears when he's hot. Even last year at the beginning of the year, and then Dover comes, wins Dover, and then once he got that suspension, just hasn't been the same there. When he wrecked Austin Hill at Iowa.
Yep.
Friesen, that's mind blowing, because I don't know. I don't think it's a case of him being like over his head in some of these races. He just doesn't have the speed. Doesn't have the speed, which is surprising. He's still running dirt around the Central New York area, still being successful there. I don't know. The only thing you can come up with is the transition to Toyota, and it just hasn't panned out yet. But he could. I mean, there's no Eldora, which is scary for him. In order to make the playoffs, but he could go on a tear. He won twice last year, got to the championship race. Somehow I think he wins over the final six. But he's been way off this year, so who knows?
Yeah, I would not feel confident making that prediction. I can't even count more than like three races so far this season where they've even remotely been in contention. I mean,
They're going to be throwing some Hail Marys soon.
They're struggling to get stage points,
mm-hmm.
let alone good finishes. And by the time finish time rolls around, they're out of it. So it's, you never say never, because like you said, he could be like Sauter. He could turn around and win three races in a row and go into the playoffs as a favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I'm just not feeling that with that team. I feel like they're almost to a point where it's throwing the towel on this year and let's start experiment to see that we can be good for next season.
I don't think you're there yet, because they're going to throw.
That's what I'm saying. It's close.
Because they're going to have to throw some Hail Marys here over the final six of the regular season. Neff, any final topics before we get to one last one that I got about practice?
Practice. No, I think I'm good.
Cool. So obviously, I think it was like an hour after we recorded last Tuesday, NASCAR came out saying that there is no practice sessions or qualifying for the rest of the year in any of the top three series. I feel like we could go on for a long time about this, so I'm going to try and keep it short. But overall, quick minute or two overview of what you think about no practice or qualifying the rest of the year.
I mean, I'm okay with no qualifying. I would like to see them adjust it a little bit.
Which they plan to do for the playoffs.
Have the top 16 draw for starting position instead of top 12. Because you've got dudes. And again, if you look at it in hindsight, that may not be the best idea, because legitimately 13th back to 18th or 19th are really the guys battling for those final playoff spots. So maybe having them in the group that's all drawing is a good thing. But I feel like guys that are running in 14th, 15th in points are not drawing well on a regular basis.
You know,
and it's just luck of the draw, but that's making their efforts doubly hard. And they've made it to that point in the points that they should get a little bit of a reward for that. So I would like to see them switch that up. I still maintain that I would like to see one practice session that literally you can go by the order of points win this as well. And you let five guys go on the track for 5 minutes. And they go out, they run five laps, they come in, 5 minutes, and then they're done. And that's the only practice they get. Just to shake the cars down and be able to fix any minor things that happen. Because when you get to the track on a normal weekend, you'll kind of go out there and shake it down a little bit just to make sure all the bolts are tightened and the lines are tight and everything else. And we've had multiple instances this year of guys having their races ruined when if they had just been able to run five laps in practice, they would have caught it. So that's, other than that, I'm fine with it. I don't want to be going back to freaking 3 2-hour practice sessions over the weekend and dragging it out over 3 days. I love what we've got right now. I'd like to see them tweak the draw a little bit, and I'd like to see them give them 5 minutes of practice, but that's all I want.
Which they are going to tweak. They've been talking about tweaking the draw. I would imagine they've been talking about once the playoffs are, so I'd imagine it's 1 through 16. But yeah. like you said, before the playoffs, I mean, Tyler Reddick more times than not started in the 20s. And as we've said, it's hard to pass. Luckily at Kansas, he ran the top, and in five laps he was 11th. But so I'm, yeah. I'm, not,
But imagine if he started 11th.
Yeah.
He'd have been in like fourth.
Yeah. So I'm torn on it, though, because I definitely think there should be practice at the Daytona road course race.
Yeah, that's idiotic. Especially in the support series.
Yeah. That's going to be a shit show.
Total shit show. If they manage to get a full lap in the first quarter of that of the race, I'll be surprised at the support series level.
Yeah, because not many Cup drivers have been on the track, let alone Xfinity or trucks. So they should have. I know they're in kind of borrowed times right now, and they don't want to wreck a car, which there's going to be there's going to be carnage that weekend. There's no way around it. I think they should.
I haven't heard. Are they going to let a Kaz Grawler run the 21 on that road course? Because that would be the smart thing to do.
Yeah, I know he's doing Road America. He did not have any set dates after that, but he thinks there's going to be a handful of races. So
they would be dumb not to put him in that car at Daytona, because he's got a lot of laps around Daytona in a car that could really benefit them running that Xfinity race.
Him, Allmendinger, Cindric's obviously going to be good. I also don't like it, though, for the championship weekend. You're going to have we already know however it works, no matter who makes the championship four, they always have the four fastest cars, at least in the Cup Series.
Yeah.
So maybe this evens that out for the rest of the field. But even that, I don't know. I feel like there should be some sort of practice for the championship race. If you're not going to have qualifying, fine. But practice, I don't know. I feel like we should have practice for the championship race. IndyCar's doing it. Why can't NASCAR do it?
Don't know.
So,
but that's what we got.
Those are the only two that I don't like. You're going to have the championship race decided on guys who are first through fourth. They're going to start there no matter what. And then there's no practice. It's kind of, it'll be interesting for sure. You could have like.
Now is that the plan? That they're going to start one through four for the championship? Or are they going
to
draw 16?
That's true. Maybe not.
Essentially, I mean, I know that they like to do it that way.
Yeah,
and it still opens the possibility for my greatest championship scenario ever, which I will always hold my breath and will finally happen, where they drop the green with the top four in the top four spots, and they wad it up going into turn one, and then we spend the entire race watching which teams can get back out on track the fastest, because you know they'll waive the 6 minute clock for that.
So I take that back. I'm not sure how they're going to do that, because like you said, or like I said, top 16 probably, or that's what it looks like it's going to be for the playoffs, but I wonder if each round it dwindles down. 16, 12, yeah, 8, 4. That's what I would imagine. But who knows? Neff, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No. It was,
we had a sad week.
It was an interesting week. Seeing Cup be the first race of the weekend, that's just kind of a little weird to deal with, but that was interesting. Now you mentioned that, I did want to say, thinking about the Petties,
yeah,
with Maurice Petty passing away, you know, Lee Petty and Richard Petty were the guys driving, but Maurice was as integral in that operation as anybody early on, even before Dale Inman got there, and making sure those cars were fast and got to the track and won races. So sorry for their loss.
Yeah, and not only the Petties, and obviously our thoughts and prayers are with the Petties. Maurice is a pioneer of the sport, building those engines. But also Danny Scholl, who was at one time the track president of New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Or my bad, I got the mix up. Bob Baer was once time.
Bob Baer.
Yes, he was at one time the New Hampshire Motor Speedway track president, as well as Oxford Plains Speedway. He died last Friday, and Danny Scholl passed away last Thursday. And also Brad Campbell, who, very tragic story there. Yeah, spotter for DGM Racing, was on his way to the plane last week, got into a car accident.
Yep.
And ultimately succumbed to his injuries this past week. So our thoughts and prayers, tough week. Our thoughts and prayers at Front Stretch here are with those families. And it's going to be tough, but obviously, you never know when your last day is, so you got to live life to its fullest.
Enjoy them all.
Absolutely. But now, before we get out of here, we got one race this weekend, just one. It's kind of crazy to think only one race.
How is that possible?
On a weekend when over the past, 11, 12 weeks, it's been nonstop racing. But the Cup Series is going to New Hampshire Motor Speedway. last year was a good battle at the end between Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin, ironically, the two best drivers of this year. The year before was Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick. Who you got winning?
I'm going to go with Jeff Burton. He owns that place. Oh, no, wait. He doesn't run there anymore. Man, normally I would jump all over Denny Hamlin because he's good on flat tracks, but after what they did at Martinsville, I'm not exactly feeling it. And same thing with Busch. Busch used Hamlin's setup at Martinsville, and that was an abject disaster. I mean, Hamlin won last, correct?
Yeah. No, well, and I'm, last year?
Then I'm, no, last week.
Right, yeah, Hamlin.
Then I'm going with Harvick, because that's the way it works this year. We get Hamlin 1 week and Harvick the next week. So I'm going with Harvick to catch back up to Hamlin and wins.
It seems to be that way. I think it's going to be another battle between the two Goliaths this year with Harvick and Hamlin. Since you went Harvick, I'm glad you went Harvick because I was going to go Hamlin. It is a little concerning that, like you said, the Martinsville deal where you expect Hamlin to run top five, lead a lot of laps, win the race potentially, and he was out to lunch. JGR was out to lunch, except for Truex. Toyota's been really good. They've owned New Hampshire, really, over the past, I don't know, 5-6 years, although Harvick's got the last two wins there. So should be hopefully it's an entertaining race. I'm sure there's PJ1 going to be laid down, which can lead to it's over the years it's been proven to be pretty good at New Hampshire, but I'll go with right. Denny Hamlin. Neff, we got a conversation with Matt Crafton coming up. I talked about Crafton a little bit ago on the podcast. Got his first win of the year this past weekend at Kansas. Overall, Crafton seems like he had some bad luck at the beginning of the year, but now he's got four straight top fives in the win. So it looks like the 88 team's starting to hit it all strides.
Absolutely, I'm a big fan of Crafton. Always have been. Love his dry sense of humor, love his honesty, and love just his driving ability. He's never too high, never too low. If you ever listen to him on the radio, it's he and Johnny Sauter are such polar opposites. Because, I mean, Sauter can be winning a race by 20 car lengths and still just screaming and hollering. And Sauter can be out to lunch and he's just analyzing and giving them, you know, great feedback as to how to fix it. And that's where... Yeah, that's the difference of the two and Crafton of most everybody because he's so smooth. I mean, he reminds you a lot of Matt Kenseth. Uh-huh. He's super subdued. It's his job, and he's out there making it as best as possible. But when he has to, he can get up on a wheel and get it done, and this past weekend was no exception.
Yeah, he definitely has his moments on the radio where he kind of lets his team know how he feels, whether positively or negatively. But let's get to our conversation with Matt Crafton. All right, Matt, you had a couple of races over the weekend at Kansas Speedway. Obviously, I want to start with the second one because you started 12th in that one via the invert from Friday. Led the final 22 laps en route to the victory. Overall, just take us through that Saturday.
We started off, we were actually really good. Drove to, I think, third on the first stage, second on the second stage, and then... had a really fast rush all week when we were there. We finished fourth the night before. I think we had a little, definitely felt like we had better truck. Just last set of tires, we got really free for whatever reason. And knew what changes we felt like we needed to make and had to make to make it a winning truck on Sunday or Saturday. And we did it.
Now that they made the announcement just the other day that we're not having any practice or qualifying the rest of the year. And that certainly makes the race days and weekends go a lot more efficiently. But would you like to at least see, like I know you've done some dirt track racing, just like a hot lap session for 5 minutes or so for you to at least shake down the trucks in case there's anything that's mechanically off just from unloading?
No. I mean, at the end of the day, I understand what they're doing. They're trying to save people money. And so you don't have to bring two trucks. That's just a lot more on the teams to have two trucks prepared and two trucks ready to go. And so if somebody did wreck in that 5 minutes of practice, it's more money. So if you don't have the practice, it's going to save money. And right now, the times we're in, we got to try to save as much as we can.
Now, this past weekend was the first time the Truck Series had races in consecutive days. You're obviously a Truck Series lifer. What did you think of the doubleheader at Kansas?
Oh, I love it. I mean, it was very cool to do, without a doubt. one of my favorite things of what we've done so far is just midweek races. I'm a big fan of midweek races and doing that, just because I think it's, especially the truck series, doing that, because our races aren't long enough so people can watch, come home and start watching a race at 6-7 o'clock in the afternoon or in the evening and watch the whole thing. I love the idea of the cup races doing it, but they're just too long. And I mean, you get that at midnight and then people struggle to stay up till midnight when they have to be at work at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. So the midweek races is a big fan of that.
Right on. Now, those of us that have been truck fans for an excessive amount of time love the trucks. I mean, I know most of us can speak for say that the trucks put on the best races week in and week out. And invariably, the season, just in our opinion, is too short. Do you think if we do more midweek races that the teams and you guys might be able to do a 30-35 race season, especially if we're not preparing two trucks to take to the racetrack every week?
Nah, I think that might be excessive, 30-35 races. we think we need to get back to what we... you're an exciting race fan there, Mike. I think you cost teams way too much money there. we got to think about cost saving money, too. I truly believe that you could do 25 races. That's what the truck series used to have, and that's the way I feel it should be, at least 25 to maybe tops 28 races. But all in all, I think just adding a little bit would be the key.
For sure. Now, Matt, getting back to the season at hand, you've got a lot of crap, I feel like, over the past couple of years for not getting into Victor Lane, winning last year's championship without a victory. What did it mean on a personal standpoint to finally get back into Victor Lane?
I mean, it's definitely good, and without a doubt, but I don't worry about what people like you guys say. You guys got to have something to talk about us not winning a race and winning a championship. Said it gave you guys something to write about and ooh, and all that stuff. So I just got a kick at him more than anything.
I'll have you know that was Dustin that gave you garbage about not winning, not me, because I know that you love how I always give you crap about not winning. kind of an interesting thought I had in preparing for this interview was, it's been a little while now since the fire that wiped out y'all's shop. Do you feel like you're 100% back from that thing, or are there still little things that happen every now and then that you're like, man, I wish we still had our old stuff?
No, I mean, the shop is, within, by the end of that year, we had the shop back running 100%, and actually above 100%, because, I mean, it did destroy a lot of stuff, but then we had to knock down a bunch of walls during the fire to put the fire out, so we ended up actually opening the shop up and making it more usable and user-friendly, per se, so that part is fine. One of the biggest things I think we fought was just trying to get the switch over from when we switched manufacturers from Toyota to Ford. That was definitely something that kind of caught us off guard. And we did it really, really late in the year. And in, I think it was 2017, we did it. And then it's not easy, without a doubt, to do it. And then we had the whole switch over to the Ilmor Motors, and that's been something that all of us have had to learn as well.
Now, Matt, this season, you've got four consecutive top five finishes, obviously the win on Saturday. Overall, how would you gauge the season so far for the 88 team?
The speed we've had, I mean, I would give it a B+, mm-hmm. without a doubt. I mean, we've been off some weekends, but we know why we've been off, and we've tried a little bit different stuff here and there, setup-wise, and it hasn't worked, but we weren't horrendous. We just had terrible luck. I mean, we raced around people we shouldn't have been racing around, and I mean, you race around squirrels, sometimes you get wrecked, and that's kind of what happened with us at Pocono. And it was just something that the driver should have never tried to stick it in there three wide, first lap, first corner, last second on the bottom. It was the dumb decision by the guy that did it on the bottom. So, and then we just broke track bar at Charlotte and had really good speed, led laps there, and ran in the top five majority of the night until we ripped track bar out of the frame. And then blew a tire at Homestead and running really well before that. And then we went to Atlanta, and Stuart Friesen missed his pit stall and decided to stop. And everybody knows, I think three or four of us had just piled in the back of each other and tore up and wasted our day. But all in all, I mean, before that, in Las Vegas, we had very good speed as well and could have had a shot at winning that race as well. So all in all, not a terrible season with the speed, but just the luck part has had us down for a little while, but we finally got that going in the right direction.
Now, you guys obviously are a championship caliber team. You've done it multiple times. I was watching that race earlier this year where your alternator went dead, and the team was able to change out a battery and keep you on the lead lap, and then you end up running the vast majority of the race with no blowers, no fans, no creature comforts, and you know, just kind of everybody in the team stepped up. Is that one of those moments that if you are able to go to Phoenix and win a championship this year, that you can look back on and say that was kind of one of those championship moments that, that turned you in the direction of winning one?
No, I mean, we had speed before that, but it was just one of those deals. We thought, okay, here we go again, some of our 88 luck that we're having this year, and the alternator quitting on lap five and having to shut the blowers off and running the rest of the race. And the guys did a phenomenal job changing the battery two different times at the end of both stages, and we got stage points, and that's how fast our truck was. I had to drive from the back and get stage points in every one of them. So the guys are... They dig hard, and they knew that I was digging hard that race without any kind of blowers, and it was mid-90s there with the humidity. It was probably in the 80% range, so it was brutal. It was one of the hottest I've ever been in a race car.
Yeah, that does not sound comfortable. Matt, you mentioned how speed-wise you'd give it a B-plus so far for you guys. Compared to last year, do you feel like speed-wise, again, you're ahead of where you're at this point last year?
At the end of last year, we had the speed, but mm-hmm. just didn't, again, we were having terrible luck until we got to Homestead. I mean, if you look at it, Martinsville, we were actually leading Martinsville when the motor just shut off literally on the end of the stage, and we won the stage, and then the motor shuts off, and then went multiple laps down there, and just had just a bunch of just gremlins, and in Las Vegas, we think we're running third, fourth. And that's when every Thor Sport truck pretty much blew up. And
that was simultaneously, too.
it was pretty pathetic, really. And it was nuts. Like I said, I blew up, and Johnny blew up at, I mean, exact same time. And I was actually calling on the radio that Johnny's on fire, and they're like, oh, you are, too. So to get us to get to the championship and to win it was very sweet. And I mean, a lot of the people that actually did pay attention did see our speed, and they're like, man, I mean, you could have won one of the multiple races, the last five races, but just nothing ever went your way. But we ended up pointing ourselves and had enough stage points throughout the races to get ourselves to Homestead and finally get it done. Once we knew we were going to Homestead, I felt that we had a very, very good shot. I mean, we were the dark horse and the underdog and all that, and I loved it because I knew that we had a very good shot of beating them and making a heck of a story out of it and giving you guys something to write about.
Sure.
That you did, brother. That you absolutely did. Now, you mentioned the Martinsville luck and the Vegas luck, and during those times you were absolutely letting everybody know of your opinions on the engine package. Obviously, it's designed to theoretically save teams money, although I don't know that it really does that. But at this point, now that you guys have had it for a while, do you feel like that y'all have wrapped your arms around it and been able to overcome any kind of issues that you were having with it initially?
I mean, at the end of the day, I think Gilmore and themselves, they're learning about it and what you can and can't do. And I think what happened with in Las Vegas was just insane because we had refraced all those motors and everybody at the beginning of the year in the same tune in all the trucks, and it was fine. But when we went back there at the end of the year, the temperature during that race, it was so much hotter, and it made the motor so much more lean, and they ended up having to put pistons in majority, if not everybody in the field, because everybody was running pistons during that race and having that whatever exactly it was, we'll call it, their issue, and they had to eat a lot of it. And I hated it for them, but at the end of the day, it's something that they're trying to learn all of it as well as we are on it.
Kind of off that, Matt, tying it back into this year too, you and Grant both have victories. Obviously, Grant has two. Ben Rhodes been super consistent. Johnny, though, has had some tough times, maybe some of that bad luck that you had earlier in the beginning of the year and also last year. Where would you, like, stack ThorSport, obviously being one of the bigger teams in the Truck Series?
I feel we're as good as anybody, the KBMs and the GMSs. I mean, if not better. I mean, I know we have more wins than all of them. I'm sure KBM might have the equal amount to that Kyle. But at the end of the day, I know probably our organization probably has the most wins per organization.
Neff, you got a final question for Matt?
Something that's completely off grid. And I know you were doing it. I don't know if you still are, and I'm curious if you are. For a while there, I saw you at local racetracks helping out late model teams. Are you still doing that kind of local short track consulting stuff?
I do when some of the people get a hold of me and when they need help and when they're being a person and ask for the help. Because at the end of the day, we're all race car drivers. We all think we're perfect and we don't do anything wrong. But sometimes it takes a dad or a person to say, "Man, I need a little bit of help. Can you help us here?" So whenever the opportunity arises, I definitely do it.
Matt, I'll get you out of here on this one. It's a fan question. Comes in from our friend at Fastlane, Ed Lane. Ed wants to know, would you like to see more short tracks on the schedule, kind of back to where the trucks used to be?
Not quite as many as there used to be. I mean, there's some short tracks that I wish we could go to. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to throw one out there, would be IRP or ORP or whatever they call it nowadays. That was one of my favorite racetracks. Milwaukee, Memphis. I mean, those places we should be going to, and there's some of the mile and a half that we probably shouldn't go to twice. We'll just say that, and maybe add some of the short track in and do it that way instead.
You go to Milwaukee, you'll be in trouble because Sauter is the stuff there.
Yeah, he thinks he is. So, no. Yeah, we'll...
Noted. Well, Matt...
Yeah, so, well, okay, man, I'm not too worried right now with poor Johnny's luck. I mean, that poor guy, he's had one heck of the last few races.
Yeah, he's been worse than you.
Yeah.
Noted. Well, Matt, really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the Front Stretch Podcast, and good luck next weekend.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, y'all. There you have it. Good conversation there with Matt Crafton, who finally scored his first victory in over 3 years this past weekend at Kansas Speedway and has really come on the past 4 weeks, four races for the Truck Series with the 88 team. Big thanks to ThorSport Racing and their public relations team who really put that interview together fairly quickly in order to be on this week's show. Much appreciated. As always, fun chat with Neff discussing all things Kansas. Seems like so long ago since the Cup Series last race. Obviously, after having so much racing over the past 2.5 months, whether it be the Cup, Xfinity, or Truck Series. For the teams, though, this past weekend was a much-needed off weekend. Obviously, you saw a lot of drivers and teams and personalities in the sport on vacation. And this weekend, the Truck Series and Xfinity Series gets their off week, which will be much-needed because we're in for a grind here over the final 3 months of the season. That's it for this week's show. As we stated at the beginning of the podcast, make sure to go on over to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and much-needed reviews. We see the numbers, we see that people are listening, so don't hesitate on helping us out and also letting us know who you want to see on the Front Stretch Podcast. Until next week's show, we're Review New Hampshire. We out.